Today is June 20th, 2017, and this is episode number 416 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor at TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, and I'm leaving on a jet plane. I don't know when I'll be back again. Except I do know it's going to be in 2 weeks.
Yeah, and all you have to do really is look at your ticket because it has your return date on it.
That is, I could do that too, but I happen to know it. Anyway, so despite the lie that I just told, I'm going to go away for 2 weeks. Are you going to have someone, you're going to co-host with someone?
Yeah, of
course.
You
have someone guest? Fantastic, dude. That's awesome.
Yep. We're awesome. Just going to have all kinds of fun while you're gone, which is not to imply that we don't have fun when you're here. Just wanted to make that clear because I didn't want to bruise your ego.
But it also doesn't necessarily mean that we do have fun when I'm here.
True.
So, you know, there's that. So this explains why we're recording on Tuesday.
Right.
June 20th. Mm-hmm. Rather than Wednesday, June 21st.
Right. And we could have held the show till Wednesday.
Yeah. But no, why?
Why?
We're here. We're doing it.
Yeah. So we'll share it today.
To get the full story on anything we cover, that's the longest. That actually is the longest title of all time. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at ACM@macobserver.com.
I just realized that's also the first time that you've had a title that's so big it involved two people in a conversation.
Yeah, exactly. That is oh so true. So listen, in celebration of the fact that I'm not going to be here, and the fact that you have a cough,
sorry.
Why don't we start with listener email?
Yeah, let's do that. I'm kind of all choked up about listeners, clearly.
And the celebration of you being choked up, and celebration of the fact that I won't be here, and that you're likely to have more fun with probably substantially lower amounts of pedantry, but that's no, mostly
I didn't say that. Also, I didn't deny that.
Mostly pedantic. Let's actually start off with listener email for daily observations.
Sure, why not?
So obviously TMO's daily observations, most of our listeners will know that that's the daily show that you host. Mm-hmm. Every morning is the short format show where we look at a couple of topics that are hot that day, as opposed to the Apple Context Machine, this show where we go deep into things, right?
Right. Sometimes topics, sometimes rabbit holes.
Sometimes deep, dark rabbit holes. But in this particular case, the reason why we're going to talk about some listener email from TDO is because he's yelling at me and you.
Right. And it totally relates to things we've discussed on Apple Context Machine as well. Also, you won't be here for the next 2 weeks to talk about these emails.
Right.
So we're taking advantage of the fact that we have a platform right now.
Right. And in that particular episode of TDO, mm-hmm. you and me and John Martellaro mm-hmm. talked about HomePod and the fact that you and I want Apple to release some kind of inexpensive listening device that would essentially compete in the same. I mean, like, let's not say it's going to compete with the Echo Dot. Let's say that it's going to compete for the same need that Echo Dot tries to satisfy.
In this case, I will totally accept your pedantry.
Because it's important, I think. I mean, it's like Apple competing with netbooks with the iPad. Apple was competing with the same need that netbooks were trying to fill with a completely different form factor and approach. So I'm not saying that Apple needs to release the iDot. I'm saying that I want an inexpensive device that lets me walk around my house without having to worry about whether or not I have my Apple Watch on me or my iPhone with me. You and me are largely in the same camp on this. Mm-hmm. And John Martellaro is like, no, it's good enough. You can just, everyone's got their Apple Watch and, you know, all you have to do is lift your iPhone out of your pocket, whatever. It's just, it's nonsense.
And, well, see, nonsense. Okay, here's John's problem with this. And I can totally dive into this because he's not here to defend himself.
That's how we roll. By the way, we both love John and respect the crap out of that guy.
Oh, absolutely.
He's one of the deepest and best thinkers in the Mac space. So even when I disagree with him, love him to death. So please go.
Yeah, I love him to death. But in this case, he's completely wrong. And his thing is, look, you've got your phone with you. You've got your Apple Watch on your wrist. And if you think that it's a big deal to have to like lift a device to talk, then you need to realign your life priorities. And in this case,
it just makes me want to start like throwing like punches, just rabid, just frothing at the mouth, just like I'm just like swinging at people and stuff. And it doesn't even matter. It just like I'm going to go to jail for this. But go ahead, please.
So the vision I have of you doing this, Brian, actually involves you like pinwheel fisting.
Yes, yes.
Not, you know, pinwheel your fists, not pinwheel fisting. That's a very different show. And there's like no one right in line with your fists, but you're pinwheeling to punch and you're just so upset.
Yeah, that's essentially it. In part because he's projecting. He has his Apple Watch with him all the time. I happen to have my Apple Watch with me most of the time. Mm-hmm. He probably has his iPhone with him all the time.
He does not.
But he has his Apple Watch.
But he has his Apple Watch. Yes. But
anyway, he's project. Don't project. Not everybody does that.
Right. And to John, it's not a big deal to grab the device, lift the device, and he thinks that's ubiquitous enough. Now, I'm assuming by me saying ubiquitous enough, that is totally grating on your pedantry, because it's either ubiquitous or it's not.
Well, I don't know. You know, actually, I kind of get the ubiquitous enough argument. I just reject it. But I get where he's coming from.
Yeah, I get where he's coming from, but he's wrong. And the notion is that the technology should be so pervasive that you don't even think about it. You just interact with it. Which, even though the Amazon Echo platform is, in my opinion, very hobbled, I still tend to use it a lot because I don't have to think about it. Once everything is set up and I've memorized the special words that I have to use for each thing that I do, I don't even think about where I am in my place. I just start talking and the Echo does something for me.
Right. And that is, to me, that's key. This notion that our smart home should be centered on our devices, to me, is ass backwards. I want my smart home. I love that iPhone will control my smart home, but that's not the thing I want. I want to speak into the air. We've made this. We're kind of rehashing some stuff there.
Well, that's to get everyone up to speed.
Yeah. All right. So let's cut to Mikkel. I got to get his name right. Mikkel Bistrom's email to us. This is for TDO. I disagree with the sentiment that Siri must be listening all the time. Quote unquote, smart home, my blank, probably ass. Smart home, my ass. I'm with Apple on this one. Get your own dangerous. Mm-hmm. Yes.
No, I was going to take us down a rabbit hole. Carry on.
Get your own dangerous third-party tools, Mikkel says to us. No one cares what you use, except some might choose not to visit you again when you run an open mic. I wouldn't. Quote unquote, I don't want to lift my arm. Well, I do, he says. Why? Because I'm in control and the systems are not, which is why I use Apple products to begin with. Mikkel, so first of all, I appreciate the email as always. I don't care how much you hate us or disagree with us. If you are going to take the time to let us know what you think, man, we
totally very much appreciate it.
Yeah, we appreciate that. It's good for us and it's good for the discussion and it's I don't know, it's good for everybody. That said, this guy's just all wrong.
So where I think Mikhail's going with this is privacy. and he's not comfortable entrusting his privacy to another company where he's not, he doesn't want to give that control. And by raising his wrist or lifting his iPhone, he's taking back the control of when the listening happens. So the vibe I'm getting out of this is that he's all about the privacy. Now, the thing about, will people stop coming to your house if they know that there's a smart device that's listening all the time? In my experience, no. In my experience, it's not even an option a concern for people. For everyone that's come into my place, I have not had a single person say that they're uncomfortable that my Echo Dots are listening. Now, if they were, I would totally respect that, and I would put them in mute mode so you could see the red ring and know that they're not listening. But I've never had anyone complain.
And someone may. I mean, again, that's one person's experience. Just like John's experience is, he's always got his Apple Watch with him, and so therefore it's good enough. I mean, that's sort of my op. I get where Mikhail is coming from, because I agree with him. I don't want these corporate wiretaps in my home. But he's missing the point. I want an Apple iDot listening to me everywhere. And again, I'm just using that name. Because Apple is the one company I trust to put the wiretap in my home, because like with the HomePod, the device isn't sending stuff back to Apple until it needs to. Mm-hmm. And I trust Apple when Apple tells me that. And Apple is doing processing locally. I mean, the reason why the HomePod is as expensive as it is, not only does it have all these speakers and microphones and all this other stuff, it has a smartphone class processor in it too. It's able to do processing and figure out stuff without checking back home with the mothership. And again, I trust Apple with this.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Further. So like the very reason he's saying that he doesn't want the open mic in his house is the reason why I want Apple to have the open mic in my house, because I trust Apple to do this right. This is why I'm desperate to have this Apple smart home, because I trust the company. I trust them not to eavesdrop on me.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. No, I'm with you.
Furthermore, I don't want to lift my arm. Well, I do, he says. Why? Because I'm in control and the systems are not. It's still an open mic, dude. It's still an open mic. It's just one that's there. I mean, it's you're still trusting Apple not to violate your privacy. And that's the entire point.
Now, you can make it not an open mic, which maybe he has done. So you can set your iPhone so that it doesn't respond to Hey Siri.
That's true. Yep. Certainly. That's a binary option for people.
Mm-hmm. So if you have your iPhone,
but if that's the case, then he just doesn't want a smart home at all. If that's the case, if you're just going to turn off Hey Siri, then even lifting your arm, well, I guess you could lift your arm and then actually push the button and activate Siri, and that's mm-hmm. fine. But if that's what you want, don't get the HomePod. But if Apple's going to do the HomePod, it should do the whole darn thing correctly.
Yes,
and the correctly bit is having the auxiliary, less expensive products that all they do is listen, and you can put them all throughout your home just like you would with the Echo Dot wiretap.
Yes, and one of the reasons why having the secondary inexpensive microphone component I think is important is because, even if you decide I'm going to blanket my home in HomePods so that I can talk to Siri everywhere, you still have areas potentially in your home where it's just not practical to have the device, the bigger device, and you'd still want to have some sort of voice communication with it. And here's my example. I live in it's a two-bedroom place. But the front door is actually down a flight of stairs. So when I walk into my place, I want to start talking to my smart home devices immediately, which means I either have to yell or I have to take a device out of my pocket. Right. So with the Echo Dot at $49 a pop, I'm actually considering buying a third Echo Dot and sticking it on the wall near my front door.
Even though you have such a small place.
Even though I have such a small place.
Okay, well, see, here's the beautiful thing about that. If Apple, you know, like the way HomePod is designed, you can actually speak. Like you and I could be having a conversation at this level, mm-hmm. right? Really quiet.
Right.
Across the room with music playing out of the HomePod. And the HomePod's going to hear you.
Right.
Because it's doing all this processing, right? Apple could make, like, I don't think Apple would make anything as cheap and the Dot's fine, but I don't think Apple would make anything that cheap.
Probably not.
But Apple could probably make a device that if you had it exactly where you've got the Dot right now, you wouldn't need to buy another one to stick by your door.
Well,
I could be wrong.
With the layout of my place, you would be wrong. And the problem is getting the sound to carry where it needs to go.
I bet. Well, okay. Yeah, maybe. And while I'm looking at your place as we speak.
Well, you're looking at one room in my place.
I'm looking at one room. You're right. Fair enough. Yeah. Okay. Whatever. The specifics I'm sure you're right about your own home.
But the point is there are places in some people's homes where a HomePod would be too big or inappropriate for that area for whatever right. reason. And right. so something that still lets you link into all of your Siri smart home voice control things would be really handy.
Right. And you know what? And let's have these devices communicating with each other from the standpoint of my HomePod network, if I'm wearing my Apple Watch, should know where I am in any given moment. Again, I trust Apple to actually keep track of that stuff because I know that they would do it locally. Right? Yeah. Apple could make HomePod and the HomePod. Can we come up? What's what? We could call it the iPod, but that doesn't seem right.
No. we could call it the. Well, let's see. We have the HomePod, so the let's home hub.
Okay, that seems safe because that's definitely something Apple wouldn't use. So the home nub, right? We got your home nubs and your home pods, and they're all talking to each other and they're all listening. And because Apple has its own processors and all this stuff, Apple could be processing like where we are walking around in our house without reporting back to the mothership, mm-hmm. without violating our privacy. This is why I want Apple doing this stuff. I trust Apple to do this right. Apple's the one company that wants to do this.
Mm-hmm.
To do it without screwing me over. Like their goal is not to like exploit me. Their goal is to actually earn money from me by selling me crap directly as opposed to, yeah, anyway.
Yeah.
Rabbit hole.
Now, okay. Now, but on the Amazon thing, I have a higher level of trust with them and the Echo ecosystem than I believe you do. And that's because I think that Amazon has a very vested interest in not pissing off their customers.
I don't think Amazon cares.
Trust.
I don't think Amazon cares. There's already been subpoenas for this stuff.
Right. And Amazon has been adamant about not turning anything over.
Yeah, whatever.
And
Apple's been adamant
about not turning anything over. And you're not saying, well, whatever about that.
Yeah, because who's got the better track record there?
Well, right now, Amazon and Apple have pretty similar track records for that.
Well, Amazon's track record is to listen in on us and then try to sell stuff based on it.
Right, like, but they're not giving it over to the government.
Yeah, but I don't want them listening at all. Apple is not listening. Like when we do Siri stuff, Apple is not listening. HomePod sends stuff. When HomePod has to send something to Apple servers, it does so in a way that is completely anonymized.
Mm-hmm. Which I think is awesome. That makes me very happy.
And Amazon is not. Amazon's sending stuff back that's attached to us. Because Amazon wants that information, and they want to profit from it. It's the whole point.
That's the whole point of Amazon.
And yeah, exactly. So I don't trust Amazon.
All right. Well, I trust Amazon more than Google. I trust Apple more than Amazon, but my level of trust for Amazon is clearly higher than yours. And okay.
Amazon and Google are two sides of a poop dipped coin.
I can just see you flipping a coin and you look at me and you go, heads or tails? And I flip it in the air and I say, it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter because it's covered in poop.
Because it's covered in poop. It's covered also, in poop. Go wash your hands before we shake or you have lunch or whatever.
Do what with my hands?
How soon are you leaving on vacation?
Oh my God, that's what you look like when you're flipping me off. That's fantastic.
Wait, no, really. How soon are you leaving?
Yeah, 17 hours.
Oh, I could make it sooner. All I have to do is hit this one button right here.
Well, there's a couple buttons. And then we'd have to post it. Anyway, whatever. Mostly pedantic. So anyway, it's interesting. It's like I think Mikhail is like agreeing vehemently with us. That's what John Key likes to say about me and him. We're always agreeing vehemently with each other. All the things that he says are important are the reasons why I want Apple to do this. But the best thing, Mikhail doesn't want Apple to do this at all because he doesn't want it. If he doesn't want it, he just doesn't have to get it. If Apple's going to do HomePod, do it right.
Yeah, I agree. Now, on Apple doing HomePod right, I think that Apple is heading down that path, but I think that they needed to get their product out.
Yeah,
they were ready to do it.
This is what Apple does, right? They do things one step at a time.
And considering there's so much more that they can do with HomePod without a hardware upgrade, they can roll out these software updates that add major functionality improvements. So they could make Siri do a whole lot more at any point, just with software. They could turn the HomePod into a true sound system for a home entertainment setup. And anyhow, the point is, there's a lot that can happen, and I think that what we're getting this fall is going to be a great foundation for Apple's plans moving forward in the music space, in the entertainment space, and in the smart home space.
We won't see the home nub till 2018 at the earliest, if we see it at all.
I think you're right. Yeah.
We're not going to see the home nub introduced alongside the HomePod shipping. Now, if Apple did that though, boy, man, I'd be so happy. I don't know. I'd be doing things that John Keat would describe inappropriately.
That's such a wide area.
that's true. So
I've seen him describe the most mundane things in completely inappropriate ways.
Again, absolutely true. The takeaway here, though, is Apple's not going to do that. It's going to be another year. Apple's going to want data from the HomePod, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But you know, Apple didn't know exactly how we would use iPad
or Apple Watch
or iPhone.
Yeah.
Right. So here's what I think. I think Apple is pitching this thing as a music device, and Apple is going to be surprised at how many people are using it as the smart home controller as a primary function. Mm-hmm. And when that happens, I think that Apple will react accordingly.
I have a feeling you're right. Now, was it on this show or on TDO where you led me down the path of me talking myself into buying a HomePod when they come out?
Oh, goodness. Where was that? That might have been CatMac.
Oh, maybe. I think it was when we did the CatMac presentation.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. And, yeah, and that hasn't changed. I still want to get one.
I definitely want a HomePod. You know, the interesting thing for me is you've been to my place now. Mm-hmm. Where would I put a HomePod? Because I'd want it in. I've got two rooms in this house, and I'd want it in both of them.
Well.
And it's the layout is screwy, right? I mean, like
you would need to get two,
right?
Yeah, I could do one and put it in my living room. It'd be just fine there.
Sure, but that would be ridiculous to have two in the space that I've got.
Yeah,
I mean, anyway, all right. Okay, anyway, thanks for the email, Mikhail. Don't know if you listen to ACM, so maybe you can mention this on TDO tomorrow.
Yeah, I'll mention it on TDO tomorrow. And then I'll even include a link to today's show in tomorrow's TDO show notes so that Mikhail can find it easily.
Great. That'll be that's fantastic. Shall we move on to Michael's, not to be mistaken for Mikhail?
Oh, holy crap. I just realized we've only talked about one listener comment so far.
Yes. Michael Cogman wrote into this time. He's actually writing into us for this show. And he let us know that England sometimes gets hot. That's funny.
You know, I've watched so many shows from the BBC. Mm-hmm. I've never seen that ever.
Fair enough. So, but that's not why we're mentioning him. It's Michael Cogman. He talked to us about cars, and he says he's been interested in cars for a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Am I getting the right email there? Yeah. He says, firstly, may I say that I really enjoy all your various output, especially this last context machine, as my life has revolved around cars for the last 50 years. Thank you. That's incredibly kind of you to say, sir. So here is where he brings an interesting point to us. He talked about my premise that autonomous vehicles are going to be officially rolled out first with long haul trucking, and that we're going to see distribution centers opening up or being further exploited that are outside of cities, and that autonomous vehicles will drive from distribution point to distribution point, and humans will drive the trucks in and out of the other actual nearby cities. Right?
This seems very plausible to me.
It does, but it turns out I'm being extremely U.S.-centric, and that is such
meaning
a good point.
You personally, not our commenter.
Correct. I was being very U.S.-centric. He said, I'm quoting, regarding the initial take-up of autonomous vehicles in the USA, I can understand Brian's premise that the first testing would be on the wide open spaces of America in trucks, but in the confines of Europe, those smart hub to smart hub with onward delivery locally advantages, in other words, the advantages that we would see in America, would probably be outweighed by the problems of navigating through or around each town. There are just so many of them that any similar testing would be limited to motorways without the advantage of distance to amortize the cost of many more smart hubs. He's got such a good point. And Europe is pushing hard on autonomous vehicles, too.
Mm-hmm.
So whether or not Europe is pushing hard and whether or not Europe faces very, very different circumstances than the U.S., I think that the long-haul trucking will still beat city driving to market.
Considering where a lot of the efforts are being focused right now for coming up with autonomous vehicles, it seems to me like the United States is probably the place we'll see more of this first. Now, I think a lot of that's because we already have these big wide open spaces between cities where long-haul trucking is a big thing. So we've already got that set up, and then adapting autonomous vehicles to that market is probably a fairly easy thing to do compared to what it would be in Europe. So why not start that here and continue to improve that technology here? And then as things can roll out on a smaller level, meaning passenger cars, then we can look at how that rolls out across Europe as well as the United States. Well, and China.
Yeah, and China. And there are certainly other places where where there are lots of wide open spaces between cities, thinking parts of Russia. God, can you imagine what Australia, yeah. Can you imagine, though, what the Russian mob would do to autonomous vehicles? But not a scary thought. Africa, parts of, I don't know, maybe parts of Asia, maybe not parts of Asia. Certainly parts of China. There are certainly some wide open roads like on the steppes, Mongolia. So, yeah, anyway, but it does turn out that the world is not the United States, which every once in a while it's very good to be reminded because, you know.
Yeah, the world, it turns out, is a lot larger than the space surrounding our studio.
Yes, but I think that long-haul trucking will still beat pervasive city driving for autonomous vehicles to market.
Yeah,
in Europe, in the U.S., wherever.
I think so. I
just
think
so much easier.
Yes, that's it. It's easier. The number of variables that you have to deal with go down dramatically when you move outside of a city.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the cost benefits for trucking companies in the U.S. are substantial.
Yeah,
the cost opportunities are substantial.
Yeah.
And not just by eliminating human, by maximizing fuel efficiently. That's a huge thing. By being able to have a truck drive nonstop without the need for any regulated sleep time is a big thing. Of course, that would actually have to be established through the regulatory process too. So I think a fuel efficiency alone is a huge reason for the trucking industry to want to tackle this ASAP.
Yeah, I agree. And yet if you can reduce the fuel costs, and as cold and callous as this may sound, reduce the manpower costs, then the trucking industry becomes substantially more efficient and more profitable.
Drive time, fuel efficiency, fuel optimizing, and operator error, those three factors are outweigh the cost of the actual driver.
Yes,
right. The someone is getting X amount of dollars per hour to drive this truck. Mm-hmm. I think those other three factors are probably bigger.
Yeah, probably.
I mean, it's like manufacturing in China. It's not that people there are making so little money. It's all of the other factors that go into making China, in particular, a better place to manufacture huge numbers of anything. That are the real issue why manufacturing is not coming back to this country.
Right. Yeah. So, I think there's a lot of incentive in the trucking industry to get to the autonomous vehicle state. And we're already seeing tests that are being done. There are long-haul trucks that are on the road now in very controlled and monitored situations that are hauling product around. Hmm.
Those aren't getting the attention that Uber and Apple and Google are getting.
No, but if you watch, you'll see the articles popping up periodically about these trucks being tested. So there's tests that are being done outside San Francisco and I believe outside Los Angeles. Hmm. And there have been like longer distance tests that have been done in Colorado. And I believe in all those cases, you have other vehicles that are traveling with the truck. So it's kind of like this caravan right now. Because you don't want to just set something like this out on its own without monitoring it, because so much of this is still in a testing phase.
Right.
Still, the idea of of the trucking industry being able to move more efficiently and have vehicles that can run 24 hours a day, because you don't have to worry about driver fatigue.
Right. Yeah.
That's very compelling.
Yeah. And again, yeah, it's huge. It's hugely compelling. It's going to be a threat to, it's going to be a further threat to the train industry.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. If it turns out that you can load up a fleet of autonomous trucks and send them out for less money than using trains to move cargo across the country, well, you're not going to see trains hauling nearly as much.
Yeah. Or yeah. Although the railroad industry has definitely made a comeback in the last two decades.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Rabbit hole. Massive rabbit hole. All right. We've taken this topic plenty far, I think. What's our other thing here?
No, I think we need to recap that topic right there. The important thing is that we've been given a very important reminder that what's happening with this technology extends beyond the borders of the United States.
Yes. Yes. Europe is working hard on this. China is working, maybe not as hard, but is working on it. And Apple is working on it with Didi, I think, in China.
I think you're absolutely right.
You know, we made that case, the idea that Apple is going to bring all three of those things, you know, autonomous vehicles, ride sharing and electric cars, that they're all going to come together. And I think it's going to start with Didi.
Yep. I think it's
Didi. Didi, Didi. All right. Beady, beady.
Hey, Buck.
Beady, beady. AR kit. I want to get to both of these topics, so we may end up going long today. Hopefully we can. I don't know. We'll see. Let's find out, right?
I can't wait to see where this goes.
AR kit. Let's start there. Okay. AR kit. The other topic near and dear to my heart, but AR kit.
Mm-hmm.
We were going to talk about that this week, and we asked our listeners to remind us, and none of them did.
Which tells me that our listeners are just as organized as we are.
Oh, right. Oh, man, I feel bad for them.
Me too.
So here's the cool thing. We actually forgot what we were going to talk about on AR kit. We have a note that says AR kit.
Yeah,
that's it.
But no, you know, at least we made the note.
Yeah, at least we made the note.
Now, unlike everyone else.
We could have gone back and listened to the show and see if we left any tidbits for ourselves, but...
You know, the one thing we didn't do was check and see if someone left a comment on last week's show saying, don't forget to talk about...
No comments.
Oh, well, okay then.
Yeah. Never mind. So, here's what we're going to talk about with ARKit.
Oh, tell me, Brian. I can't wait to hear.
Where it can go and where we want it to go.
Oh, I like that. We could have just said that's what we're going to discuss anyhow.
No, man, I believe in the sausage factory.
You most certainly do.
We're spilling our guts. That's what we do.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, I think that that AR has been kind of just like wandering as people try, different companies try and find what the killer use is for consumers. And I think that that now that Apple is getting into AR in a big way with iOS 11, that we're going to see a lot more experimenting, and we're going to see these ideas kind of coalesce into really usable features at some point. Like this week, we have the announcement that Apple is partnering with IKEA for an AR app that lets you test out furniture, IKEA furniture in your home. Mm-hmm. So this is something that IKEA is planning on launching when iOS 11 ships this fall. And people have pointed out to me, different companies have had AR apps for the iPhone already where you can try out furniture in your home. That's absolutely true. The difference here is that because of what Apple's doing with iOS 11, this goes from let's put pictures of furniture in your home to being able to dynamically size photorealistic furniture in real time in your home. And so it becomes much more immersive, much more realistic. And because of that, I think it has a higher likelihood of being used more by consumers than previous augmented reality shopping experiences.
Well, I'll cut to the chase a little bit. Because Apple's building in all of these tools into iOS 11, developers don't have to reinvent the wheel. They can just tap into this stuff, and they can put their creativity into ideas, maybe interface concepts, implementation, execution, as opposed to development.
Like, yes, and we've seen that already since Apple released the first developer beta of iOS 11, which includes all of their ARKit stuff. We started seeing these demonstrations of what people were doing with the ARKit, like within days. And yeah, some of it's right. Just like amazing.
Some of it is amazing, and it's just the early days. We think it's amazing now. Hopefully, probably within 6 months, by the time iOS 11 gets released, we'll be going, oh gosh, do you remember when we thought that stuff was amazing? Because now it's really amazing.
Right. And, and up till this point, the most compelling augmented reality experience for me has been Pokemon Go.
Right. And obviously that's been a success. And that's the thing. It's interesting. I always go back to Tim Cook saying that he was very interested in wearable computing, but he didn't think it belonged on the face. It's not quite the way he put it. It's not a quote. And we don't do research here, so I don't actually have the quote.
Right, but that's
ready.
That's good enough. All right,
and he said that a couple times.
Now, with that in mind, Brian, how do you feel about Apple focusing on the iPhone and, by extension, the iPad as their augmented reality platform?
Well, that's the thing, is that we look at things, generally speaking, with our eyes. Most people.
Mm-hmm.
There's some hearing involved, I suppose, sometimes, right? You figure out where stuff is with your ears, got all those senses working together.
Mm-hmm.
But we look with our eyes. So why wouldn't you have on the face be a place for wearable computing, especially if it's dealing with augmented reality, i.e. Google Glass, a now canceled project. And Tim Cook was very specifically talking about, he was bagging on Google Glass without naming it.
Mm-hmm.
And working us towards the release of Apple Watch, which goes on your wrist, not your face.
Right. Yep.
So, but the thing is, Apple is making iOS into what is not even, I don't even think it's arguable. I think it is definitively the premier platform for AR.
I will hold off on agreeing with you for now, because iOS 11 is still so brand new and is still only available to developers. How long ago was developer conference? 2 weeks?
Two
weeks. Okay, so we're talking about a beta operating system that's been available to developers for 2 weeks. I think it's a little early to say that it's the preeminent platform for AR, but
I said premier.
Excuse me, premier. The premier platform.
It's just nitpicking.
That's totally just nitpicking. Yes, but it may very well turn out to be the premier platform for AR based on what we're seeing already.
I would say that Apple has delivered tools that kick every other platform's butt into the ground. I mean, don't get me wrong. The VR stuff, which is separate but related to AR,
mm-hmm.
that Facebook is doing with the Oculus system, that's all great and is fantastic. And there are some other VR platforms or aspiring platforms in the works. But in terms of bringing an ecosystem to AR, Apple's, what we've already seen from iOS 11 settles that. iOS is going to be, when iOS 11 ships, it will be the premier AR platform, period.
And Okay, so developers, Brian has thrown down the gauntlet.
Yeah, don't let me down.
Don't let him down. And I think going with the phone makes sense, and I would be surprised to see Apple change from that in the near future, meaning like over the next 18 months, we're not going to see glasses from Apple. And the reason
Apple's working on glasses. The question is whether or not they're going to cancel it, which we hear is which supposedly coming from leaks in the supply chain. There's a very high chance that Apple will cancel whatever it's doing with glasses, goggles, whatever.
Right. And regardless of how good the technology is working, I get it. It makes sense to me. First off, if you don't have to wear glasses, why would you? But then also, the device time is our iPhone.
Yeah, okay, but do you want to walk around everywhere going like this? Like a bunch of dorks playing Pokemon. I mean, you can't actually function in the real world like that. By the way, I'm holding my, Jeff can see me, I'm holding my camera up in front of my face. You know what? That's just as nonsensical as saying that it's okay to maybe have to lift my iPhone to make my smart home do something. Crazy.
I was going to be so disappointed if you didn't bring it around to that, because you're absolutely right. But here's the thing. Right now we're at a place with this technology where you need to get people interested without making them invest more. And that's what the iPhone gives you.
Oh, yeah, for sure. For sure. For sure. For sure. As a starting point, having this be on iPhones and iPads, that's actually great. I'm not criticizing that. It's going to be really big. But if you want to make AR pervasive, right? If you've got to do what Google tried to do with Glass, but do it better and without being glass holes about it.
Yeah, and so I'm not sure how Apple's going to approach this. And
yeah,
but you're right. I mean, at some point you need to take this beyond the lift the device and hold it up to do the function thing. You want to make it ubiquitous. So what is that going to be? And the obvious answer is glasses, but maybe there's something else. Well,
glasses and then contact lenses and then eventually some kind of ocular implant. I mean, that's far in the future. But I mean, there's a very specific.
I kind of wish you were a Futurama fan because we could have an amazing discussion right now. But you're not. So listeners, you watch Futurama. You know what I'm talking about. It's now our special private little thing that Brian's not in on.
Darn it. So I want to be crystal clear here. What Apple is doing with ARKit in just iOS with just iPhones and just iPads is going to be amazing. It's going to be fantastic. I'm super excited about it. I'm not bagging on that. I'm looking ahead to the next step. At some point, we need to be able to get AR content without having to lift the device in front of our faces. Mm-hmm. That's when it becomes super useful. You know, when we can get people's names, when we can get the directions, you know, and like, you know, like a heads up display in a car. But while we're walking around, mm-hmm. When we get contact information for people we know, we can get restaurant recommendations. We can get reviews that are popping up in the air. These are the kinds of useful things that go far beyond putting a coffee cup on a table, or far beyond. Far beyond games, which are great. I mean, these things are great, but the usefulness about it is when it becomes really humdrum, ordinary information. That's when AR will be part of our lives, inseparable from our lives. It'll be just like an iPhone. We wonder how we got around without it.
Yep, I'm with you there, and I'm really interested in seeing how Apple addresses that from a hardware standpoint.
Yeah, I am too. You know, it's so interesting. I keep coming back to this, Jeff. Tim Cook telling us that the face isn't the place Helpful hardware man. I mean, sorry, face is
helpful hardware person.
Person.
They changed it several years ago.
Oh, yeah. You're right. They did. But the, where he says that the face isn't the place for wearable computing. And then we find out that Apple's was working up. And even when he said that, it's like, well, yeah, it is. But then we find out that Apple is actually working on its own goggle kind of glass kind of thing. And it's been very, very hard for me to justify that, because this would be the first time if Apple releases any kind of goggle like product. It will be the first time that Cook Code has directly contradicted what Apple actually did. Oh, I just don't know what to make it. I just don't know. There's missing information. And so I obsess. And I don't know. I'm not sure where Apple is planning to take us. You know, and maybe Apple is planning on letting third parties use ARKit to do glasses.
That's an interesting idea.
Huh. Maybe Apple, or what is also possible is that Apple has been finding in its development process, and they've got 1,000 people that we know of. This was like a year ago. Mm-hmm. They had 1,000 people working on AR, and maybe they have found that, just like Google found, that glasses can't yet do what we actually need them to do to be useful. Right? There's a reason why Google canceled Glass. And it wasn't because they suddenly decided that they didn't want to peep into everybody's life.
Right. Yeah. It turns out that that this whole concept platform they developed wasn't going down the path that they had hoped.
Right. So, and this by the way, is another reason why I want Apple to do some kind of glasses, because I trust Apple not to be cataloging every single person that I meet and you know, looking to see whose butt I'm checking out. Right?
It's me.
Seriously. Yeah, well, yeah, of course it's you, Jeff. It's always you. It's always you.
I know. That's why I wear those nice jeans for you.
And to the ladies in our lives, I'm sorry. what's the timestamp on that?
That would be 52 minutes.
52, okay. Well, yeah, gotta make sure I fess up on that one. Yeah, so this is why I want Apple to do this stuff, and there you have it. And let's go. We should move on, shouldn't we?
Yeah, because we don't have much time left.
We don't have much time. So here's the deal. I was talking to Andrew Orr.
Yes, one of our writers.
One of our writers, gifted young man. I like this. I like this kid a lot. He wasn't around the Apple world, at least not in the capacity that he is now, back when the DOJ was suing Apple for iBook. So, you know, he wasn't covering the iBook or the ebook publishing industry. He wasn't covering, the fight between Apple and Amazon like we were. Mm-hmm. And so I was catching him up on a lot of background, you know, a lot of like, you know, what Amazon is doing to the publishing industry, the race to the bottom, you know, all these things that we've talked about quite a bit. The DOJ's weird witch hunt against Apple while they let the monopolist go, it still just really pisses the crap out of me off.
Yeah. Pisses the crap
off. Anyway, makes me mad.
Pisses the crap right out of you.
Thank you.
Which is really weird visual.
Oh God, did you have to? Okay. So anyway, unlearn. Okay. So, and he wants to see changes in iBooks. He wants the app to be better. He wants discoverability to be better. He wants Apple to make the ecosystem better.
These are all reasonable requests.
Yeah, they're fantastic. And, you know, I talked to him about how Amazon has done such a great job of making Kindle a self-publishing platform, and that while you can self-publish for Apple, for iBooks, it's nowhere near as easy as it is with Kindle. And we're talking about all that. And he pitched the idea to me that Apple could turn its fantastic fleet of Apple retail stores into bookstores to promote iBooks. And so my first question is, okay, what part of what Apple has in the Apple stores now do you think that they should pull out to put books in?
That's a good question. Also, Apple already pulled all the books out of the stores.
Right. And why would Apple sell physical books at all? That doesn't make any sense. And exactly how many books do you think Apple should carry? They used to carry about, 30 books. It was basically a shelf, sometimes two shelves of nonfiction books. And they were all MacBooks because that's what Apple did was Macs.
Right.
And then iPods. And then Steve had a hissy fit.
That started with the Wiley title.
Yeah, the Icon book.
Uh-huh.
And he ended up pulling out all of Wiley's books and all the other books went with it. And, but those were just, there were 20 or 30 books. It was a shelf. And
they also had shelves of software back then, too. But I know, rabbit hole.
Yeah. Right. And the reality is, if you wanted to make a dent in being a book reseller, you'd have to basically turn every Apple store into entirely a bookstore. And that's not going to happen either. So, and I can't believe I'd never thought about this before, but what Andrew was saying, using the Apple stores to promote iBooks is obvious now that he's pointed it out. And I thought about a way of how Apple could do that.
All right. Fill me in.
All right. And we haven't talked about this yet, folks. So
I'm not throwing Brian a line to set up whatever it is he wants to talk about.
Not this time. Although
no, Apple, I actually don't know.
Yeah, Jeff is usually very kind about that sort of thing. Imagine, if you will, displays on the wall. Or maybe displays with a chair. Oh yeah. Like a comfy chair. You know how Barnes & Noble started putting comfy chairs in so you could just sit down and read if you wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So like some kind of, they've already got these areas where people can sit down. What if some of those areas had displays that were say 2 or 3 feet tall and you could stand there or sit there and you walk up to it and it's got like, say, the bestsellers and you can tap, tap and you get sci-fi bestsellers or tap, tap, tap. You get authors by or books by author because they could have a Siri interface. So you could just say, show me all the sci-fi books. Show me all the books by Dan Simmons.
Mm-hmm.
Show me all the books where George Martin shows us boobies. Be a lot of books.
That would be a lot of books. Show us Brian Chaffin's latest book.
not yet. Thank you. That's very, very kind of you. And what I'm getting at is that discovery on our iPhones and Macs and PCs and Android devices is hard. Amazon is the best at it, and it's still hard. It still sucks. Apple is probably second best at it, and it still sucks. They're doing a lot of stuff with iOS 11, the App Store and iOS 11, where they're really focusing on discovery. Mm-hmm. And it's still going to suck. It's going to be a big improvement, and it's still going to be hard. We are a visual creature, right? We like to be able to see things and handle them. We're tactile people.
Tactile. Oh, yes.
Right? Well, I know part of this is because you and I are middle-aged men. But I find it easier to shop for music going into, say, a CD store. Flip, 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 to get the little click.
Well,
all those clicks going.
Okay, so it's not the clicks for me, but...
Well, it's not the clicks for me either, but that's a side effect.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, I'll accept that. All right. So for me, when I go into a bookstore, or especially like a dedicated music store, it's about having a very... easy to interact with visual world, and so I can go and look and find, like, let's say I decide it's time for me to buy Talking Heads albums again, even though I've already got them. But as I'm flipping through that, the tabs in the bins on either side, I'm seeing those names. And I might see an album cover.
Well, and we do judge books by their cover.
Oh, absolutely.
And
albums
and everything else, because we are visual people in addition to being tactile people.
Right. And there's also the amazing thing of you're in the bookstore. Oh, okay. even better example for me, comic book store. I can go on to Comixology and I can look at all different types of comics all day long. But when I walk into Time Warp, I can walk up to the counter and say, what are you interested in right now? And they're like, oh my God, there's this new title, Black Hammer. You've got to check this out, or whatever it happens to be. By the way, check out Black Hammer. It's really good. And there's no way I can find out about that with any sort of digital discovery that we have going on today.
Well, Apple and some other places do that kind of with playlists and recommendations, but it's not the same.
It's so not the same.
But it's not the same. But I mean, I hear you. And that human interaction, that's another thing that we do. Maybe millennials don't, because, you know, millennials aren't very good at human interaction. But at least our generation is still, you know, very focused on, you know, like, hey, Jeff, check this book out.
Yes.
And look at me. I'm excited about it. And, you know, and you're gauging, you're reading me, you're listening to my excitement, you're seeing my excitement. And then you get to see the cover. And again, we're very visual creatures. We judge things by their cover. Now, fine, we're not supposed to, but it turns out we do. It's harder to experience that online with your screen and your mouse, and it's the small screen, even if it's a big screen. Even if it's your TV or whatever. It's not perfect. When it comes to looking at books, I find it, and I believe that a lot of people agree with me, that it is a lot easier to walk into a bookstore and look at a shelf of books, be able to spy the author's names, be able to you know, the fonts are catching your eye, the covers are catching your eye. Mm-hmm. You can pick up that book, you can open it, you can read the back cover, you can feel the book, you can you know, feel the quality of the paper if you're a nerd like that, like me. You know, the quality of the cover, and you can read the back page, you can read maybe the first few pages, and it's a different experience than doing almost that exact same thing on your computer, your iPhone, or your iPad.
I agree.
Yep. Okay, so here's my thing.
Okay.
Apple, of course, doesn't need or want to sell physical books. Doesn't benefit Apple in any way whatsoever.
Correct.
And so Apple can't put a bunch of books in the stores to promote iBooks. Again, that makes no sense. But Apple could give us these large displays that come close. I don't want to say mimic. I don't even say duplicate. But that offer a similar experience to being able to browse books or music even. They could do this with music too, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Browse books in a way that is similar to going to a bookstore. It's just you and one shelf, and that shelf is dynamic, but that shelf could present books in the same size that books are in the real world. You could touch them. You could flip through them. Like, you know, you could just, I'm waving my hand fast for Jeff here, but you know, you could just like flip through a bunch of books and, you know, and stop where you get to the one that you want. You could, touch it and, you know, and it expands just like it does on iPhone and iPad now. But again, it's a different experience because it's bigger. Mm-hmm. More, again, I think more closely replicating that bookstore experience, and then it could using an iBeacon, you could touch a buy button on that big screen, and then it would pop up something on your iPhone where you then confirm the purchase.
Okay,
right there on your iPhone or your iPad, just right there, an iBeacon. It's I mean, like you don't even have to scan a QR code for that.
So, I like it. And at the same time, I'm kind of feeling, because Apple has been so poor at giving us good discoverability. And I know I'm singling out Apple, excuse me, because we're talking about Apple stores. But no one has given me a good digital discoverability experience yet.
I know, but this is a different approach. This is why I want Apple to do this. This could be an improvement to discoverability.
Maybe. But it also feels to me like if you handed someone an iPad and said, flip through these iBooks on the screen.
It's different, man. An iPad, it's not the same. It's just not the same. You could do so much more with a large. You could do so much more with a large screen where you're standing up and it's giving you that store like experience. You got people around you. You got noise. You got, maybe you can go sit down with it. You know, maybe you can flip something over to your iPad screen from the using handoff so that you can go sit down and read it on your iPad. I mean, there's a lot of things that could be done here. And listen, here's the deal. Your resistance makes me think that I'm onto something.
I knew you were going to head down that path. It's, you know, I would love to see something like that work, and I would love to have a digital discovery experience that's in line with what I get when I walk into the store. That would be awesome. And it would take away so much frustration for me when I'm looking for music, when I'm looking for books. And I would just love that.
I would go browse books at an Apple store.
Now, I don't see people same thing with using music that too, as a destination thing, like saying, I want to go to the Apple store and look at books. But I could see where that would be an awesome thing when you're sitting there waiting for your Genius Bar appointment, or you're waiting for your... class.
I think there are book nerds like me that would do that. I don't think I'm alone in that. But it's not everybody by any means. But I think it would be. I used to go to Barnes and Noble and I stopped when I started buying iBooks. And I actually missed that experience.
I still go to Barnes and Noble just to go to Barnes and Noble. There's also, Brian, when you're out here, we're going to Boulder Bookstore, and we're also going to Tattered Cover.
Am I coming there?
Yeah. Don't know when, but yes.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, it's not
tomorrow though, right?
Surprise.
I was wondering where I was going.
Yeah. Now, you know, these are amazing bookstores. You're going to love both of them. Independent bookstores and their destinations in and of themselves.
Here's, I want to go to them. I love bookstores. My problem, the reason why I don't go to Barnes & Noble is because I don't, what do you call that? There's a practice. There's a name for it. I don't,
buy?
No, there's a practice for going to a store, using the brick and mortar space to find what you want, and then ordering it from Amazon. Showroom. I don't showroom.
Showroom. No, I don't showroom either.
Is intellectually bankrupt, and I also don't want to buy physical books because I much prefer to read books on my iPad. So, but I'll go. I'll go to your bookstores, man. I love bookstores, especially independent bookstores that are great. I love great bookstores. I would end up shopping for books at.
You'd go to an Apple store.
The Apple store.
Books.
Yeah.
All right.
Absolutely.
I think I just realized where part of my resistance to this is coming in, and it's that I have kind of migrated away to a degree from buying digital books to buying print books again.
Oh.
And it's because
you're not alone.
Yeah, and honestly, in most cases, it's because of the price. I can buy the print book for cheaper than the digital version.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, the publishing industry needs to figure some of that stuff out.
Yeah.
And also Amazon can go blank itself.
Yeah.
That's actually blank another
itself. Like snuggle up with, oh, not blanket.
No, not blanket, although it could rub that poop coin on itself.
Oh boy, howdy.
So anyway, I think I'm onto something here. I think Apple could do the same thing with the music.
All right. So I'm going to pose a question, don't take this as a resistance thing, because this is not how I intended. What's Apple going to take out of the store to make room for this? Same question you posed to Andrew.
That is an excellent question. I think it could probably take some cases out. That's probably not my call. But what I also think is that, especially with stores that are big enough to have the seating areas,
they could put it in a seating area. Sure.
Without detracting from that seating area. If anything, it would augment the seating area. You know, you could have it because you could have it at the edges of the seating area where people are standing up. And again, you maybe take it back to a chair. Mm-hmm. But you don't have to. It's a question of scale. And Andrew's initial idea of actually putting actual physical bookstore requires a lot of things to be taken out. Putting up 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 screens doesn't require anywhere near as much space, but could actually serve the same number of books as you know, the biggest bookstore on the planet. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's true. Smaller Apple stores, it would be
smaller Apple stores. Yeah, maybe they don't have them.
Maybe this is just something for the flagship stores.
For the flagship stores, yeah, that's possible. And there's one other thing. There's a lot of benefit here that Apple would get by simply promoting iBooks more. Right? I would assume there are a lot, and this isn't even an assumption, the numbers back this up, there are a lot of iOS users who don't care and or know about iBooks.
Yeah, that's true. There's a lot of people that if they're doing anything with digital format books,
they're doing it with Kindle.
They're doing it with Kindle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Read Andrew's piece for some other ideas for including the improving the iBooks ecosystem. I'm going to write about this particular idea when I get back from my trip 2 weeks.
Yeah. So make your notes now so that you remember in 2 weeks.
Are you just meeting me?
Or at least put a post-it note on your screen that says, listen to today's show.
Yeah. Again, are you just meeting me? Anyway. Yeah. Great idea. It's a fantastic idea. Let's just go with that.
Okay. We'll go with that. Yeah. All right. Well, we're, for us, surprisingly, over. So maybe we should wrap up so you can finish packing.
Yes! Great idea!
All right. And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. And hey, thanks for listening.
I just got an email from someone that says, and I quote, "We just completed a survey of 3,809 millennials showing that 40% of millennials are most excited about VR porn, compared to only 24% most excited about video games." Duh. Are you know, wait, 40%. So the other 60% are liars. Got it. Okay.
Right.
Let's see. I was supposed to read that other thing instead of emails. Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by CashFly. The bass is by Boom, recorded just for TMO. And that's all for this week.
Hey, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer.